That's hot. Mysteriously, that's really hot.
Hello everyone, welcome to the very first episode of That's Hot,
the show where we discuss everything from pop culture, current trends, to politics and decide if they're hot,
that's hot,
or not.
That's not hot.
My name is Ante.
And my name is Veronica.
And our topic today is linguistic diplomacy, Eurovision Song Contest. It's the perfect subject for our first episode because it includes both pop culture and politics.
We are going to discuss why most songs on the Eurovision Song Contest are in English, what it has to do with globalization and the impact it has on us and the future of our languages. But first, let's talk about our favorite winners.
My personal all-time favorite winner is Loreen with Euphoria from 2012. It was sung in English. And very close second place holds Molitva by Marija Šerifović, sung in Serbian. Which is also my mom's and sister's favorite. I think there's a little bias there because it is in a language they understand. And I think that's a perfect example to show how older generations enjoy songs that they can understand. Which is important because a lot of Eurovision Song Contest voters are not fluent in English. Also, there's something about hearing your language being sung to an audience of 200 million people that wakes up that sense of belonging inside of you and makes you proud, even for a few minutes.
Well, my favorite winner is probably Alexander Rybak with the song Fairy Tale from 2009. I'm in love with a fairy tale, even though it hurts. The song was sung in English, but the winner is a Belarusian musician who performed for Norway. I remember watching it when I was young. He was totally one of my first celebrity crushes. I also really enjoyed the song that Russia was supposed to present last year. It was from a very cool band called Little Big, and it was a really unexpected decision to let them present Russia because our Eurovision Commission always goes with a safe choice. All you have to do is to be ready for some action now. The song was really fun, was sung in English and Spanish. It's such a shame they couldn't perform it.
So, both of our favorite winners are in English. Are we subconsciously being influenced by mainstream media? No way. I recently watched the Eurovision Song Contest movie on Netflix, starring Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams, whom I love, and it kind of touched the topic of language. They were supposed to sing a song in English, but they ended up singing a song with Icelandic lyrics called Hometown. They were disqualified because it's not allowed to change the song, but people watching them from home felt very proud of them singing their own language.
Oh, I really enjoyed the movie as well. I think it captured the spirit of Eurovision perfectly. So, how did Europe's favorite song contest came to be? Let's talk history. To give you a little insight in what was the idea behind the Eurovision Song Contest, here is some history about its beginning. The origins of the Eurovision Song Contest stem initially from a desire to promote cooperations through cross-border television broadcasts between European countries in the years following World War II.
So, basically, Europe was very divided after World War II, and they wanted to bring us back together. And what better way to do it than through music?
So, let's take a look at the actual stats. Actually, the country with the most wins is Ireland. They have 7.
I didn't expect Ireland to have the most wins. I don't even remember them winning. Let me check when did they win last time. It was in 1996.
Well, we weren't born yet. That's why I don't remember. And the second place has Sweden with 6 wins.
So, Sweden is second with 6 wins. Well, that makes sense. They always have such a crowd pleasers.
And ABBA. Following, we have France, Luxembourg, United Kingdom, and the Netherlands with each 5 wins.
Luxembourg? Why? I don't even remember them being in Eurovision.
The last win was in the 80s, so...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Then we have Israel with 4 wins and Norway and Denmark with 3.
So, you may wonder in what language is the most winning songs were. No surprise, English is the language with most wins, with 33 songs being in English, winning songs being in English. That's more than 50% of all winners. And second place is French with 14, which makes up 22%.
An interesting fact is that in the last 20 years, only 2 winner songs weren't in English.
Yeah, I don't really remember any non-English songs at all. Maybe that one crazy performance from 2007 from Ukraine. I think we all remember that dude in the silver foil outfit singing Ein, zwei, drei, sieben, sieben, ein, zwei.
Sieben, sieben, allulu, sieben, sieben, ein, zwei, sieben, sieben, allulu.
But that also had some English in it.
Well, I loved this performance too, sadly. It didn't win. But Ukraine actually was one of the recent winners, and the song was performed in a native language, Crimean Tatar. But why do you think that is, that countries are now choosing to perform in English?
That's a good question, but my guess would be more people are fluent and understand English nowadays than back in the 70s and 80s, and sometimes it's easier to find songwriters and producers who write in English, so no wonder that Eurovision singers want to work with them. But between 1966 and 1973, and again between 1977 and 1998, countries were only permitted to perform in their own language.
Actually, from 1956 to 1965, there was no rules in place to dictate which language a country may perform in. However, all entries up to 1964 were performed in one of their country's national languages.
But then in 1965, Sweden's Ingvar Wicksell broke with this tradition to perform his song in English called Absent Friend, which had originally been performed at the Swedish national final in Swedish.
And following this, a new language rule was introduced in the 1966 contest for all competing countries, preventing entries from being performed in any language other than in one of the country's officially recognized national languages. So, as we can see, there is a tendency for countries to choose English over the national language for their Eurovision performances. May this be an impact of globalization? Let's discuss.
So, how is the impact of globalization even measured?
There is a thing called the Globalization Index. It's based on comprehensive understanding of the underlying drivers for globalization across 5 main pillars: openness to trade, capital flows, exchange of technology and ideas, labor movements, and cultural integration. With these key categories, the index incorporates a broad range of sub-indicators for 60 countries and spans a 20-year time horizon from 1995 to 2016. We actually found a statistic that shows globalization index and its growth in correlation to the number of countries participating in the Eurovision. And through years from 2001 to 2016, we can see a steady growth and with numbers of countries participating in Eurovision and the globalization index.
We also have another graph that shows the world's most globalized countries, and it shows that out of top 15 most globalized countries in the world, 13 are in European Union. The only two other that are out of European Union are Singapore and Canada. So that also proves our point that Europe is very much globalized. And another fact worth mentioning is that not only European countries take part in the contest, but also countries such as Australia, which was introduced to the contest in 2015, and in 2016 they won the second place. They were very close with Ukraine. Then we have Israel, and we also have Turkey. So it's not only European thing, it's a global event that has a huge impact. But it's also very vital that we mention the importance of preserving language diversity.
Language is an important part of any society because it enables people to communicate and express themselves.
Language preservation is the effort to prevent languages from becoming unknown. A language is at risk of being lost when it no longer is taught to younger generations, while fluent speakers of the language, usually the older people, die.
When a language dies out, future generations lose a vital part of the culture that is necessary to completely understand it. This makes language a vulnerable aspect of cultural heritage, and it becomes especially important to preserve it.
As much as learning English as a second language is important and gives access to more career opportunities and can help us to connect with people from all over the world, using mother tongue and passing it to younger generations is just as important. In 2021, we can say that it still hasn't come to that extent that European languages are dying out. But if we continue this trend of prioritizing English, I can see more and more younger generations not being able to express themselves in their own language. And that results in the mother tongue being used less and eventually becoming endangered.
We still use our native languages in everyday life, and it might seem as there is no danger of them becoming extinct. However, we can all agree that each year, English becomes a bigger and bigger part of our vocabulary, and even replaces some of the expressions we use. We can clearly see the strength among German speakers. It even has a name now, being called Denglish. I, as a native Russian speaker, also notice this tendency in my language, as English and German come from the same linguistic group. Hearing them combined is quite bearable, but hearing this done with Russian kind of makes my ear bleed.
This trend is also very present in social media. Viral memes and TikTok videos are some of the major contributors to this. If content creators want access to a bigger audience, it's much easier to achieve this with English content. If they have to choose between using their mother tongue and making content in English, that will reach millions of people, almost billions of people. Of course, they're going to choose having more interactions and more followers and likes than preserving their language. Also, cartoons and children's songs, for example Baby Shark, have a huge influence on a new generation of kids. From a young age, they're exposed to its influence, and it's hard to stop it. Because you can just tell children to stop watching the cartoons, because once they start, there's no going back.
So, with all this being said, what is our verdict? Do we think English dominating European song contest is hot or not?
So, English dominating Eurovision Song Contest is definitely not hot.
That's not hot.
Although I love pop music, and especially English pop music and its ability to connect the world through catchy melodies and lyrics, I think we have enough of that outside of Eurovision. Eurovision should be an event where every country can represent its culture, people and traditions, and not some fabricated pop music perfection that can be done by anyone really. And what a better way to do it than with their own language. In my opinion, we have heard enough love songs and seen enough cliché empowering anthems, for example, 2015 winner Heroes or 2008 winner Believe, performed with fireworks and flashy lighting. It would be interesting to see and hear something more authentic. Bringing back the old rule that songs have to be native language would be effective and would make me personally more excited to see what every country has to offer. So, Veronica, what do you think? Is that hot?
That's hot.
Or
that's not hot.
Not so hot.
Not so hot. I think it's very important for us as Europeans to celebrate the diversity of our cultures and languages. If I wanted to hear a default song in English, I would just turn on the radio. Of course, the majority of songs being in English help the viewers to understand the content on the songs better. But would we really be missing out if we weren't able to understand a lot of the corny love song? I don't think so. In fact, I would prefer to hear a song in one of Europe's beautiful languages, even if it's the same concept all over again. I'm really against the rules, but in this case, maybe it would be good.
Yeah, so we both agreed that there should be some restrictions. Maybe they should make a rule that say that at least 30% of the song has to be in native language and the rest can be in English. Like, they can still sing the chorus in English and make it more catchy, but also representing their country.
So, we came to the end of our first episode of That's Hot. We really hope you learned something new from this, and we will see you next time.
Bye!
Yeah, that's hot. Community service is not hot. Rehab, that's not hot. Jail is not hot. Hillary Duff is not hot.